Right. Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Raptor Chat podcast. Just a really quick intro today, as this is a pre-recorded episode and I'm limited to 60 minutes. I don't want to waste any time. I don't want my guest to feel like he's being rushed today. So no me updates today. I'll do those on the next episode. Alternatively, you can go and follow me on my socials. So they're at the bottom of the screen and then the show notes. So. No, that's done. Today's guest is someone that has encouraged me quite a lot when I started and encouraged me to start the podcast. And he's been sort of there helping me as and when I needed. And he has always been very helpful. He's a royal breeder and he is also a fellow podcaster. I'm sure most of my listeners will have already heard of him. So if you haven't, without further ado, we will welcome Gary from Viviskin Reptiles and the Morph Talk podcast into the show.
Hi, bud. How you doing?
All right. Thank you very much for coming on. It was weird, actually. I'm not nervous at all normally, but today, for some reason, because you're a podcaster, I'm feeling a bit nervous. So it's all good. So how are you, first of all, mate? All right?
Yeah, good. Yeah. It's easy for me. I haven't got to think about questions or...
Yeah, it's weird. It must be weird for you, but not being on the interviewee side for once.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a lot easier for me because usually I have to...
I'm glad.
Yeah, well, I have to concentrate on keeping it flowing and thinking about the next question while they're still answering the last question and things like that.
Yeah, so I've got myself like a little script up in the corner that no one can see, just to keep jogging my memory every now and then. So if you haven't listened before, I'd like to start the podcast off with a section I call Get to Know. It's basically just getting, obviously, as it sounds, getting to know the person behind the social media account. So it's a few quick fire questions. And then we move on to some like this or that questions as well. All right.
Okay.
So, short, snappy answers. First thing that comes to your mind. So when you're ready, the first exotic that you ever owned.
Bearded dragon.
Nice. Current rough number of animals in your collection.
Somewhere between 60 and 70.
Nice. Favorite royal morph in your collection at the moment.
Ooh, Mandarin.
Nice. Money, no object. What's a morph that you would like to add to your collection?
Wookie.
Nice. And what is one species of animal that you would like to introduce to your collection that isn't a royal? If you could have, it doesn't matter, time, space, anything like that, just what would you have?
Money, no object, a green Sanzinia.
Awesome. Nice choice. And the last on the get to know questions before we move on to the this or that. Favorite biscuit?
Ooh, chocolate hobnob.
See, that's what I said as well. We've had some rogue ones. Somebody said Fox's Classic. I was expecting most people to go over the hobnob, to be honest.
That's not bad. That's not a bad one.
But yeah, chocolate hobnobs is the one for me.
It's probably a bit posh for me. Yeah.
Right, so moving on to this or that again, it's exactly as it sounds. So this or that, basically. So beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Sun or snow?
Snow.
Vacation or staycation?
Staycation.
Night in or night out?
Night in.
And finally, early bird, night owl, or permanently exhausted pigeon?
Ooh. Early bird, I'd say.
Nice. That's what we like to hear. Nice. Most people go for the permanently exhausted pigeon when they hear that, so it's nice to have a bit of variety. Cool, so that's the sort of get to know section done. It's just a section I like to add in there, helps break the ice a little bit, and it's a bit of fun as well, and we like to find out what people like to be dunking in their tea as well. So yeah. So let's get into it, really. So Gary, could you tell us how, when, what, sort of give us a history lesson in your reptile keeping? Where did you start? What was the animal, and sort of leading up to now?
So I got a lizard when I was 15, which was the bearded dragon. And then I got skinks, and I got my first snake when I was like 18.
Okay.
But I couldn't keep it at my house. So I had to keep it at my friend's house, because that's hence the reason why I got a lizard. My mum wouldn't let me get a snake. And then I kept getting lizards up until I was about 22, 23 when I moved, I left home, and I took, the only one I took with me was a green iguana, but I had to keep him again at my friend's house. I just kept him at his mum's house. And then after about 6 months, it was actually a guy who came round and he said he used to keep iguanas and blah, blah, blah. And I actually ended up giving him the iguana. And then I had a break from any reptiles for about, I don't know, probably about 5-6 years. And then I got my first royal, just as a pet. And then about 2016, I got into green trees, started getting green tree pythons. And then just after that, I started buying up royals.
So, well, it's quite a nice little variety over quite a long period of time. It seems like quite a lot of people tend to have that break in the middle and then sort of go all out the second time around. I know that's what I've done, and most of the people I've spoken to, again, all that sort of gap.
Well, I had that 5-6 year period. I probably moved about 10 times. You know what I mean? I lived with this friend. I lived with that friend. I shared a flat, a very small flat, with my wife when we first got together. Then we lived in a very small cottage for a while and things like that. So it wasn't until we moved in to this house, which we've been in, I think, for about 12 years. And, you know, as soon as we got here, that's it. I went and got, you know, I went and got a snake. And then he used to be in the living room. And then obviously when I got green trees, they were in the bedroom. One was in a viv right next to the bed, which used to annoy my wife. And then they were all, I've got like a box thing above the stairs that's in my bedroom. And so it acts like this massive shelf. So that was stacked up with vivs and things, and then next to it was a space, so that was stacked up with vivs, and then
they squeeze in wherever you can find the space, really, didn't they?
Basically, there wasn't in the end, there wasn't a lot of room for clothes and things like that. So and then basically I did my first breeding season in the bedroom, my wife wasn't particularly fond of it. The tail wagging. I had a female that used to tail wag every time I chucked a male in, and
it makes a surprising amount of noise as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was quite a lot. And also, thing that you don't realise until it's quiet is
I know exactly what you're going to say. Go on.
They fart quite a lot.
They fart so much more than I expected them to.
So you know, it was just literally, you know, you lie in there, it's all quiet, you're about to go to sleep, and then you'd hear that, and then my wife would sort of go, "What was that?" You know, it's them, you know, sort of thing. So she said, if you're going to carry on, you know, you got to get them out of here. So I converted the shed that I have, and you know, and built a room outside. So so for the last 3 years, they've been out there.
And that's a win-win for everyone, really, isn't it? So you get a bit more room, the wife gets the bedroom back.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's so much easier, you know, because I can keep it clean, and you know, I'm really the only one who goes in there, really. So
you know, if you put something down there, it definitely hasn't moved.
Although my egg cutting scissors go missing.
Mine can't. Mine are like fluorescent. I can't lose them.
Yeah. She steals my egg cutting scissors. So like last season, I had quite a long break between the last clutch and the first clutch this year. And I got to the first clutch this year. And of course, you're keen to cut, you know. So, you know, you've waited, and you're keen to cut. And then I couldn't find my egg cutting scissors anywhere. So, you know, I had to wait until she got home from work. And then I'm like, where are these egg cutting scissors? And then, you know, she pulls them out of a drawer and things, you know.
These ones, I've been using them for this, that, and the other.
Basically, yeah. She's like, oh, I took them months ago. And I'm like, yeah, well, I haven't had any eggs to cut, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. That's cool. So, yeah. So when you got your first... we'll go after the break. So when you got your first royal, when you got back into reptile giving, was that was it bought as a pet? Was the plan to go into breeding? Had you, or was it just sort of one of those things?
Just a pet.
Into the green tree pythons, was that a breeding thing, or was that just I want a couple of them because they're cool?
So everything with me sort of started as pet. Yeah. I I know it's, it sounds really weird, you know, like when I was a teenager, when I was 17, I worked at a reptile shop for like a year, and we used to breed there. But it just, I don't know why, it just never crossed my mind. I was never interested in breeding. It wasn't, I got that first royal, you know, obviously, and had it as a pet. No intention of breeding. And then I got my first green tree, no intention of breeding. And then it was really, I suppose, it was around the time just after I got the first green tree, I thought, oh, it'd be nice to have two. And then, you know, and then I started looking into breeding. Really, I had to, it seems ridiculous, but I really had to research breeding. I had no idea whatsoever how to breed snakes, lizards. I knew how to keep them, just no idea how to breed them. And it's one of the things that we're lucky now, things have moved on a lot. You know, I could DM someone on Instagram and they could explain the whole breeding process to me, how they
in
do
like
it.
10 minutes, if that,
And around the time when I was looking into it, it was still one thing on the internet would say one way, another way, another, and then another way, you know, and then another way. And
I think my first ever pairing was like 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. And that was like RFUK trying to work out what's going on. Like my incubator, it was a total mess, that first clutch. But my incubator was like a poly box, and then it was filled with like 4 inches of water, and it had an aquarium heater in there, and it was like a tub of vermiculite with no lid on it. And safe to say, it didn't work, and all the eggs died, unfortunately. But like you say, it was one of those things where you're just trying to find the right information online at the time, and you don't know what's right and what's wrong.
There's a bit of a cheat code to it. If there's no name on it, don't trust it.
Yeah.
If the person has written this whole thing out, this whole care sheet or this whole how I breed, blah, 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 but there is no name that you can Google and find that person, then just don't trust it. It might be right, but it's just, some of them were so contradictive of the last thing, and you just sort of, you know, and I had to sort of, luckily, you know, YouTube was pretty, you know, and I discovered Snake Bites TV pretty early on, and you know, and things like that. It actually took me a long time to come across Justin and Morph Market. I sort of did that first breeding, and I didn't even know Morph Market was a thing at that time. You know? Yeah, so it's it took me a while to sort of figure out, you know, who's who, and you know, and all this kind of stuff. I mean, I remember seeing BHB, you know, like in Snake Bites, and
I don't think you can not find Snake Bites. As soon as you go on anything to do with reptiles on the internet, he's there. Brian's there somewhere.
Yeah, especially around that time as well. Yeah. But yeah, I just remember seeing it the first time, and there was just like stacks and stacks of racks, and he's walking down these corridors of racks, and I was like, holy! I was like, they breed on a massive scale over there. You know, I was blown away that I didn't realize, I had no concept that it was that big a business in America or, you know, or anywhere really. And so, and then, it was just literally, I did the first season without knowing anyone really. When I was younger, my friends used to keep reptiles as well, but they did that thing, you know, like similar early 20s, they sort of got rid of them all, and then they never went back. So they're not interested anymore. You know, if I talk to them about morphs and things, they have no clue what I'm talking about.
It's nice that the community in the UK is, for the most part, relatively nice, and we can all chat to each other. So it's nice that although your mates aren't talking about it, you've probably got plenty of snake mates that you can chat to about now as well. I find it exactly the same. I had 3 or 4 friends when we were growing up that we all kept royals. We all sort of like did breeding projects together, and it was all, and then we all sort of got out about the same time, and I'm the only one out of those guys that have got back into it. There's one guy I talked to, like I sent him pictures, and he knows enough to go, oh, that's cool, But you know that he doesn't really care that much.
Yeah.
Look at this one that I've cut today. He's like, yeah, great, great. And I'm like,
yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Mate at work. He's like, oh, no, that's cool because he breeds as well. So it's nice that you can still find people to chat to. So I have to ask as well, what morph was your first royal? Just out of curiosity, more than anything.
Oh, it's a normal.
Yep, I expected that. Well, was it a boy as well? Because they're normal males.
Male. Terrible eater.
Yep. Yeah. Was he in a Viv when you got him as well?
Yeah.
Right. So that's quite a nice little lesson there, and sort of a nice segue. Actually, you were talking about Justin, and how you didn't really know, like Morph Market. Oh, what was what in the Royal Python world, so to speak? And now, I would say, to be fair, like your podcast is my source for reptile news, like Royal Morph related, because I can't keep up with it. There's so much going on. So how do you keep up with what's going on in the world? Because every time I listen to your podcast, you seem to know what Justin's doing or what's new or relatively new. You seem very, very up to date with what's going on. So do you feel like you're up to date to start with, and where are you sort of finding that info?
I suppose probably a better way of explaining this is I haven't been diagnosed, but my son has like pretty severe ADHD. When he was being like tested for ADHD, like my wife brought home like the checklist of what they're looking for, and I looked at it. I didn't know what it was, and I was going, well, that's normal. And she went, no, that's not normal, like that's not. And I was like, oh, okay, hang on a minute. And then I said, well, do you think I've got it? And she said, well, yeah. And
like if the hat fits sort of thing.
Yeah, basically. And but a part of that thing is, which I've always had, is if I'm interested in something, I'm like hyper-focused is what they call it. And so like, for instance, when the DG thing came out a couple of weeks ago, I spent... it's almost
an ungodly amount of time, I imagine.
I spent a week, like pretty much every hour of a week, researching not just what had been said, but also researching geneticists and genotypes, and not just in snakes.
Yeah,
it's easier to look at it from like a human point of view. And then try and translate into the desert ghost and what the findings are and things like that. And that is the same as anything for me. From day one, if I found a gene that I liked, I would probably research that one gene to the point of like exhaustion, like who found it, when was it first found, who's done what with it, everybody that's ever done anything with it, every snake in that morph that's ever been put on Morph Market, and just literally click through everything, because I was trying to look at and trying to guess what it did, who had the best example, what the better examples look like in combos, what combos worked with it, what combos didn't work with it, and all that. And I pretty much do that with every single gene that I'm interested in.
That's not a bad thing at all. I wish I could have that sort of dedication. Like I like to think I sort of know what's going on most of the time, but like I'll have my boss breeds royals as well, and we like every day we chat snakes. And half the time, I can't remember what I'm pairing this year, and I have to go on my phone and check the notes. And then I'm like, he's like, oh, what are you going to make? I was like, well, I'm hoping for this, but oh, hang on, I can't remember any of the other outcomes. Let me go and find them again. So it's pretty good. And like I said, like, I listen to podcasts all the time, and I look forward more to your podcast than a Justin video coming out, because I find that you guys, on your podcast, I can understand and you sort of explain it a bit more, whereas the Justin one, I'm watching, I'm looking at the snakes on the video, and I'm like, that looks cool. And then whatever he says just goes straight up the top of my head. Whereas because I'm listening to your podcast and it's just going in my ears whilst I'm working or whatever, it seems to sort of deep seed itself in there. So, it's brilliant. So crack on and carry on doing it. I need that new, like, snake news. talking of what your like interest in your morphs, what are you keeping at the moment? What's going on this year for you?
So Trying to think.
Let's start with how many pairings have you done this year?
So I did 15 okay. this year.
And how has that gone so far?
So 11 have ovulated. I think at least two more should. So one, probably only one of them, I'm pretty sure, is reabsorbed now.
Okay.
Really, really, really good compared to last year.
That's really good. Yeah, that's really good. And so we've got 15 pairings. Let's say 13, 14 are going to go. What is your most... What pairing are you looking forward to seeing the most, and what the outcome? I know, obviously, they're all been worked out, and they're probably different things for different projects, but there's got to be that one that you're like, I really need that one to go.
I wouldn't say I needed it to go. I'm most excited about... I've paired an Enchi Mandarin to a Orange Dream Clown.
Okay.
She's just about to lay. So I'm sort of, you know... she's really holding on to the eggs,
checking for eggs every day.
So it's just more like, how many is there going to be, you know, so that I can hopefully hit good odds. But it's that odd thing. I don't really count on odds anymore. I don't even look on. It's been 2 years since I've done a morph market calculator, because at the end of the day, what hatches is what hatches. The odds don't really matter.
No, I completely agree.
But that's probably my most anticipated this year, just because it'd be nice to see what that combo, you know, if I hit a Mandarin Orange Dream, what it looks like together. Then probably visual wise, probably Red Stripe Clowns, because I, again, did this research like about three, four years ago. I really researched Red Stripe. It was around the Magma time.
Magma
had just come out. I found the person with like the best Red Stripes I could find, and then got them, but they weren't het for anything. So I had to make the het, and then, you know, now like I've bred the het. And so
it's a long project as that as well, from making your own hets and then growing them up as well.
But I wanted to make sure it was that line of Red Stripe in the clown. So I'm really excited to see what the visual looks like. So fingers crossed for that. That's in the incubator now. I made the het. So Confusion Pieds, fingers crossed this year.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I got one clutch already, but I only had one egg left. And I thought it might be Confusion because it was quite dark. But the consensus is no one's 100%, but they don't know what it is. But I think I'm going to have possibly two more shots at that this year.
Okay.
trying to think what else. I was hoping that I was going to get some Black Azanthic stuff this year, but she's sod's law. She's the one female that looks like she's reabsorbed.
Yep. It's always that one. I've got a I was listening to your last podcast. I know that I can't remember if it was you or your guest were having trouble trying to hit pieds, and this is like my fourth year this year trying to hit pieds, and I've got the same het pied girl, and she has reabsorbed and reabsorbed and reabsorbed. And this year she's like, she should have laid like 20 days ago, and I don't know what she's doing, and I'm just like, I don't think I'm ever going to make them. I might just have to buy one.
Do you know what? They just do random things. And, you know, I think the weirdest thing that I've had this year so far was a girl who did two pre-lay sheds.
Right, okay.
I saw her ovulation, and then she shed, right, like, probably a bit early, probably around day... Well, no, actually, no, I think it was around day 20, 21, something like that. So it's spot on.
Yeah.
And then about 10 days later, she went into shed again.
And I bet you were there like just scratching your head like, what?
And I was like, well, okay. And then you know, of course, everyone you say it to, they go, oh yeah, you saw a build. And I was like, no, I promise you that was an ovulation. And then of course she went into shed again. I thought, hang on a minute, I started doubting myself, but no, she shed, and then 10 days later she dropped the eggs. So
yeah, mad.
It you know, it was really weird. So it was either day, I forget what it was. It was either day 36 post first shed or day 10 post second shed. So it was, they'll just keep you on your toes. They'll just sometimes just do random things. So Yeah, no, I think the latest I had last year was day 43, I think.
Yeah. They like you say, they do with them. My first clutch when I got back into breeding, so it was like, I don't know, 4 years ago. She had me waiting for ages. She must have gone on day, like, I think it was 73. Like, I was like, at the point where I was like talking to vets, I was like, she might be egg bound. This has happened. And then one day it just opened it and she was there on a perfect clutch. I was like, you just didn't want to give them up. So, yeah, nightmare.
That's probably a record.
I don't know. I was Googling it because I was really concerned. And there were a few people that were like, had got to day 80, day 85 plus. And I don't know, because it was my first clutch for probably a 10-year gap, I was like, maybe I didn't do the calculations right. But I've gone back. I checked all my records because I was really strict on like record keeping then. And everything was like ovulation there. She pre-laid exactly when she should. She just didn't give them up for ages. And my kids were really excited as well, because they were like, oh, we're going to get snake eggs. Like, I was telling them. Yeah. I was like, yeah, it's going to be any day now. Like a month later, they were like, when are they going to come? Yeah. It's like, I don't know anymore.
Yeah, I think DPR was the longest I'd heard of, but that was day like 52,
53. If you deep dig, it tends to be on like the old like captive bred forums. There's some people that have been had them held on for a long time.
Wow.
It's madness. But it is what it is. We got some eggs in the end, which was nice.
That's all that matters, really.
Yeah.
You know, so it's annoying.
It's very annoying.
I don't find the incubation time any different.
No, I don't.
No.
No, not at all. Not at all. I actually, it's weird as well. Like, I'm obviously, you get really excited and I'm like there. It's a bit like kid at Christmas, isn't it? And yeah. I seem to get like more anxious waiting while I'm waiting for the eggs to drop. Once they're in the incubator, I sort of forget they're there. And then, like, I've got alarms on my phone that remind me about day 50. Like, obviously, I'm putting eggs into that, so I'm in and out. But I don't, like, I'm not fussed about waiting for them to pip. Like, when they pip, they're ready. But waiting to see that snake on the eggs every day, I'm like, are they there yet? Are they there yet? I don't know what it is. And then as soon as you cut the eggs, I'm like, right, come on, snakes, get out the eggs.
See, that's the downside of cutting.
Yeah.
See, I don't mind cutting because I'm patient. So I'll cut, I'll have a quick look, and then I leave them alone until they come out of the egg.
Yeah.
If you're one of those people that just keeps going back and looking like every like 5 minutes, I would wait for them to pip because,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So I cut mine. If they've, so I like, I cut on day 55. If they've pipped beforehand, I'll cut the whole clutch.
Yeah.
But like you, once they've cut, I'll cut them, have a quick look. My wife normally takes a picture for each one so I can have a proper look, and then I'll just put them away. And then all I do is just flick the light on the incubator once a day and see if they're out. I won't open the tub until they're out again, because I don't want anything bad to happen in that little time period.
Yeah, I do the same. If there's something cool in the egg, I just take a picture so that I'll look at the picture and not.
Yeah, I'm there like zooming on the picture, changing the brightness slightly, like, oh, what is it? What is it? So, I've got a clutch that I cut yesterday, so I'm excited for those crawling out. I'm looking forward to that. I've hit my first blue-eyed Lucy, so I'm well happy with that.
Oh, okay, cool. Was that Mojave or?
It was a, what was the boy? Entry Orange Dream Pastel Posset Clown to Entry Lesser Pinstripe. But I was breeding them in, is that right? No, that's not right at all. What was the clutch? No, Butterfire Het Pie.
Oh, okay. Boy. That makes sense.
Butterfire Het Pie Boy, Entry Lesser Pinstripe Girl. There's all sorts of stuff I could hit. I only wanted to hit bells just because way back when I used to keep, Blue-Eyed Lucys and Pieds were like the holy grail snakes at the time. I said when I got back into it, I know I could go and buy one for like £200, but I was like, I'm not buying a Pied. I'm not buying a Blue-Eyed Lucy. I've got to make it myself. I think I had 7 eggs. One went bad. I cut them yesterday, so there's 6 eggs, and 3 of them are blue-eyed Lucy's. So I'm well happy with that.
Oh wow, that's really good odds.
I was well chuffed. And then the other ones are nice as well. It's my first clutch since I started again that I haven't hit a normal in the clutch as well. So that's pretty cool.
Oh wow, okay,
But anyway, enough about me. So how many clutches have you got in your incubator at the moment? Have you had any go full time and hatch yet, or are you still incubator?
No. Early in the year? Yeah. So I've had
like this season.
Yeah. 5 hatch, I think.
Okay.
5 clutches already hatched. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, one had one egg, so you know it's pretty small. The first clutch was Red Stripe Hypo clutch, so just making again using that line of Red Stripe. I wanted to make a head of hypos, so so I got four Red Stripe combos in that clutch. And then second clutch was Blackhead Het Clowns, 50% Het Pied, Posset Lavenders. I'm probably gonna shed test those. Because the thing is, some of them are, you know, you can look at them and sort of go, that one's Het Pied, because they've got tracks like for days. And the ones that don't are pretty obvious if you hold them side by side. But if you get that piece of paper that says, Het Pied, then you know. Then I think the third clutch was the one egg pied. What was the fourth? I'm trying to remember my
own. It's all right, it's fine.
I think, and then it was it the DG? I made DGs that are Het Cryptic or Het Clown. So, again, I'm going to shed test them to find out if they're Het Cryptic or Het Clown. Terrible odds this clutch. I put a visual leopard clown to a GHI Het Clown, both proven. And nine eggs, and I hit one clown.
Oh dear, that's bad. See, that's what I'm worried about by my Het Pied clutch, because it's a Het to Het pairing as well. So I've like waited 4 years. She's probably going to give me like three eggs if she doesn't slug out completely, and then I bet they're all going to be normals.
Yeah. I hit a normal in that as well, you know. Up until this year, I'd never hit a normal.
I remember you saying it actually. I bet you were happy to hit one just because
I've hit two now, so I'm done. No more normals. I don't need any more. I'm quite happy with two. To be fair, they're kind of handy because I'm gonna keep one temporarily because if I end up doing like a YouTube video, like say the mandarins or something like that, I'll be able to compare it to a normal, which is I did a Red Stripe video, and that was quite handy to sort of hold a normal next to a Red Stripe so that you can see the difference.
The comparison videos are really handy, some of them especially. I'm colorblind, so most of the stuff I can see, but I look at it as in a different way to most people. So for example, what did I hatch last year? I hatched a clutch or what was a pairing? I can't remember. It wasn't. What was the pairing? Oh, I'm a brain fart. The girl was a banana fire. The boy was a spider yellow belly pastel. So I got quite every single one was different. And I looked at them and I went, that's that, really easily. My wife looked at them and went, well, those four look the same. And I'm like, but I can see that you can't. Is this, this, and this? So having the videos, even if you're saying like this one's got slightly more yellow and I'm going, that look identical, I can pick out like different like patterns sometimes, or like the shades or the blushing and flames and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's quite handy, like you say, to have the thing. So definitely worth filming the Mandarin to normal one.
Yeah, I think
be really helpful.
I think it's one of those genes at the moment where it's like the biggest problem with them is if you see them in person, they look amazing. As soon as you put a camera on them, it strips the color.
Yeah.
And it's I don't know. It's the same with, I said this to someone else, it's the same with sunset.
Yeah.
If you see a sunset in person, they actually look really nice. And as soon as you put a camera on them, they look terrible.
Yeah, that's the problem. I've never seen a sunset in person. And everyone's like, oh, in person, they look amazing. Mm. And every single picture I've seen of them, I'm like, eh.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's all right.
Yeah,
but then a DG I think can be the same as well. Like some like DGs, like they look good in pictures, but in real life they look like a completely different animal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's really hard to explain to someone that hasn't seen them in real life how much better they look in real life, even though they look good in pictures.
Yeah, yeah. You need to have the right lighting, to be honest, to get a good picture of a DG. Same with hypo. Hypo's the same, especially if you've got orange ghost. If you've got the real orange ones, the cameras, I mean, I've got to get an upgrade for my phone. The camera on my phone is You know, like it's just terrible.
Yeah.
But I can't take a decent picture of a hypo. Just I look at the picture and I look at the snake and I look at the picture and I go, I don't understand.
It's frustrating as well, isn't it? Like you want to go, oh, look how cool this looks. And you're like, don't worry about
it. Yeah, I was doing it the other day because, you know, I've got a hypo and she's got some like red blushing on her back. And I was just trying to take a picture just to send someone. Took the picture and in the picture, it looked terrible. And I was like, she doesn't look like that. I was like,
It is what it is, I suppose. Hopefully cameras will get a bit more advanced and we'll be able to get those perfect pictures in the future.
Yeah, my wife's got a new phone, so I'm going to have to borrow her phone and take some pictures and see what it's like.
I've just got a new phone this week as well, so I'm hoping that once these babies hatch out, I'll be able to get some nice pictures. But I haven't really used it that much yet, so fingers crossed. But I'm using it on the podcast today, and it looks a lot better than the last one did, so that's good.
Yeah, so I don't know if you've got one. I had a light box.
I haven't got that. I've got a ring light that I put above and then I can faff around.
Yeah, so that's better. I was going to say, because I had a light box and I took all my hatchling pics in him last year. And one or two, not all of them, but one or two, there was a bit of a problem where they looked a little bit too good.
Right, okay.
I wasn't editing the pictures or anything. It was just weirdly, they photographed so well in the light box that when you saw the snake in person, it wasn't as good. So I've sort of changed it now so that I know it seems stupid, but the pictures that now I put on Morph Market, the snakes look worse than they do in person because I want the person to be happy, you know, like to, you know, sort of like when
that makes sense. If they're happy with the picture and then it turns up and it looks even better, that's brilliant. But if it turns up and it looks not as good as the picture, like, I've been conned here a bit. So.
Well,
I think that's a good idea, actually.
It depends on the genes, but what I found was is if the snake, say, had yellow belly in it, the light box would show almost accentuate the flaming more. So it would look like it had these massive red flames all over it, when actually, if you held it in normal light, they were much more subtle. So it sort of was sending a bit of a sort of fake picture, if you
That makes sense. I've started taking all my pictures. I try and take them outside because I find the natural light works best. Yeah. I use the ring light just to sort of fill in the shadows a bit.
Yes.
And then I originally was taking all my pictures with like a plain background, either black or just white. But I started actually taking them on my table in the garden because the wood grain's quite nice. And I find it actually helps the camera pick up the colours better as well.
Natural light is the best.
Definitely.
If you do it in natural light, that's the best.
Yeah, it's fine until you've got clutches hatching in like November, December and it's freezing outside.
Yeah, that's the problem with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which at the rate I'm going, I think that's going to be the case this year because I'm having a really slow start to the year.
Mine's later. I know it sounds, because when I talk to other people and I say I've already had five hatch, but those females usually go earlier. So it's still later. And I would say my average this year is that all my females are going 2 months later this year.
Okay, yeah, that's about where I am. Last year I had a girl going February. This year she's only just gone off food. And then I think I had my first and second clutches sort of hatching mid-June last year. And this year, like my first clutch I cut yesterday. So I've got two clutches in incubator. I'm still waiting for seven. So they're all a bit slow this year.
Yep, I cut my last clutch last year in July or August.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I'm about halfway.
I was hoping this year that I was going to go and vend at one of the earlier shows in the year. So looking at what I did last year, I was like, oh, I should have plenty of babies on the ground.
Yeah.
I'd quite like to go and vend just for the experience. And then the tables were booking. I was like, I haven't even got a clutch yet. I've not seen an ovulation. I'm not going to bother.
Yeah.
Maybe in September, maybe even later if there's a later show.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. It's just sod's law. All my best stuff is going late. So it's I was like, I could vend, but at the moment, you know, pretty much what I've got is a lot of hets and things. Yeah. I've hit the odds on visuals and things. So I was a bit like, I don't know, you know, what would I take sort of thing? You know, I'd have to try and take things from last year. and now they're a bit big. So
yeah. To be fair, on the plus side of it, my season being a bit slow is I'm hoping the market will sort of pick up a bit more because it is slowly seem to be increasing again. And maybe the snakes know. Maybe they're like, it's all right, we'll just wait a little bit and we'll up at the end of the year. So moving on a bit, what are your sort of longer term projects? I obviously don't go into all of them, but maybe pick one or two. Say, because obviously you've got hets that you've made yourself. So I'm guessing that you're planning 3, 5, 10 years in advance. So let's tell you what, pick two projects that you're working towards in the future that you're happy to share with us and sort of give us a time scale that you're hoping they will work as well. If it's easier, you can go for one if you want. Go one project if you want.
Okay. One project that I want to do is, I think they're called Black Ghosts. So the Black Azanthic hypos.
Right. Okay.
So that's one project, obviously with certain codoms involved, Blackhead and, I've got Blackhead and Phantom in those projects. So yeah, that's one project. I gear a lot of my stuff around sort of making supers as well as sort of going into double recessive type things. So hence Mandarin Lace, Red Stripe, you know, that's why I've sort of gone for those jeans. Just because it's almost like if you made a double with the super, then it's almost like a triple recessive.
Yeah, I like that. I like you can... You can very easily use codoms as like a visual head of some description. So I'd like to work. I like working like that as well. And again, like you, I like to try and hit the supers as well. And it's handy if you've got supers because you know exactly or more chance of what you're going to hit next year because you're like, right, that's a super pastel. Everything's going to be at least pastel.
Yeah.
So and it makes it easier in the long term.
It's sort of all of the recessive I have will basically cross at some point. So I basically Black Azanthic, Hypo, DG, Clown and Pied. So you know, like I'm happy for any combination of whatever. So if I make a Black Azanthic Ghost, it will then probably either go into Clown or it'll go into DG. And I'll work those projects. Obviously, you know, we're in the UK, so you've got to be conscious of space. So I can't do all the triple recessives or anything like that.
No, because in an ideal world, you'd keep everything back from every and work them all back. If it doesn't work, does it? You have to like handpick a few.
Yeah, basically. So I, depending on space and numbers and things like that, I probably will do it in stages. So it will take me a very long time. I would probably, you know, try and make a Black Azanthic Ghost, then try and make a Black Azanthic Ghost Clown, and then try and make a Black, you know, like, and then add in DG. And
You're looking at least like 3 to 4 years per extra recessive, really, aren't you?
Easy. You know, like, as I say, my Black Azanthic female's not even going this year, I don't think. So, you know, you're talking next year, you know. And then you've got to hit
the odds as well. So, it's nice because it's nice to have something to work towards. I got to last year, I had to sit down and like really think to myself. I was like, right, I've got all of these, but once I've hit like the holdbacks, what the hell am I doing next? Like, I had no plans beyond that. So, I've worked out what I'm doing now and I'm pretty happy with where it's going. But to have like a project like that, so you've got the potential eventually to hit like a, I don't even know what the word is, a 5 recessive, quint recessive, like gone past quad. Yeah.
Is it quint?
I don't know. Five. What, pen? I don't know.
Pen or quint? So, it's one of them.
Either way, like that's a project that is going to see you like a good, I don't know, 10 years or so, hopefully. And obviously plans change, but it's nice to have something to work towards.
Yeah, I don't think about it that much because, like I said, it's all based on odds. So I kind of do it now of like I said, I've got eggs in the incubator. I'm not even, I can't even tell you what the odds are of what I'd hit. Yeah. I'll cut the eggs and I'll see what I hit.
Exactly. You'll hit what you hit. It makes no difference what the odds are, does it?
Yeah. And then I'll sort of pick where I'm going to go forward based on what I hit. So, you know, like last year, I hit so much vanilla. You know, and I wasn't expecting that. So a lot of my holdbacks have got vanilla. So that changed my plans of what I thought pre-season, you know. So, you know, and then it changed what mail I got, you know, because I needed to figure out what was going to work with all this vanilla involved and things like that. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm going to go double, triple, recessive route, but those projects are quite long and, you know, you're basing it on quite long odds. So also I'll be really shooting for more what I would call simple stuff, which is getting supers into clowns, you know, like hitting a super gravel clown combo or super mandarin clown or super trick clown or super red stripe clown type things. That's more achievable in a shorter time frame.
I think you have to have like the little stepping stones on the way to those bigger ones, and then like it's like you say, it's very sort of fluid anyway, isn't it? So you might go, right, I want to hit I don't know a triple recessive in 3 years, and then the first year you go, oh, actually I've not hit that, but that would work, and then your whole trajectory changes slightly and you might come back and dip in and out. So no, it's good. That's cool. Right. Like I said at the beginning, we are limited to 60 minutes today, and I did want to touch on your podcast. So, as we've only got we haven't got that long left according to my timer, we'll finish the royal chat for now, but we can always do a round two, and we'll move on to your podcast. So, tell us, what is the podcast called? Where can people find it? And then we'll go further into it.
Okay. So, it's called Morph Talk. And it is on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. I'm going to
everywhere. Anywhere Buzzsprout will send it to.
If you maybe if you Google it, it'll come up. To be honest, I'm pretty relaxed about it, so I don't know.
No, that's fair enough. And what genre? Where are you putting your podcast? If people ask you what your podcast was about.
Just snake chat, really.
Royals specifically, would you say?
I've done just for me, I've done some episodes, you know, so I did Greg Maxwell, which was amazing. You know, chatting to basically an absolute legend of green tree pythons, you know. So that was a big one. Matt from he was called Arboreal Obsession, he's changed the name, I can't remember what he's changed to now, about Boega. And monitor lizards and things like that. What else did I do? I must have done another one that was on something else. I can't remember now.
So it was mainly royals, but there is the extra one in there as well. And like I said earlier, it's like my morph news.
So it's sort of like, you know, I want to chat. I said that I'd like to get a boa guy on. But to be honest, my knowledge of boa morphs is terrible.
Yeah.
So I'd have to do a lot of research just to hold a conversation and understand what they were talking about. Anything really. I'd like to talk to a Sanzinia guy, Amazon tree basin guy, you know, a northern guy. There's loads of guys. Sometimes basically what I do is if there's a lot going on in the ball python community or there's a particular person that I want to talk to, then I'll do whatever. You know, if it's a royal podcast, it's a royal podcast. And then I suppose every now and then I get a bit, I've done a lot of royal talk recently and there's nothing going on, so I'll grab if a guy's into anacondas, I'll grab him and chat to him about anacondas or something like that. So
that's cool. And so let's go back to the start of the podcast, the start of your podcast specifically. Why did you decide to start a podcast?
Completely by accident. It was a bit of a weird one. I don't know why I did it. I sort of posted a message on a Discord and sort of said, I'll start a podcast and I'll have the guys from the Discord on and you can come on and talk about yourself and blah, blah, blah. But it was around the time when they were just about to, which I didn't know, they were just about to start like a live channel. Like, so they were going to do a live once a week and have people on and they could come on and jump on and chat anyway. So they sort of said, look, we're doing this. So that kind of steps on the toes of that. And I was like, oh, brilliant. You know, no worries. Thinking, whew, that was good. That got me out of that. But then they sort of jumped on it and they were like, no, it's a great idea. Do a podcast. And then Gavin at Balls to You said, oh, come on and be your first guest. And I immediately went, oh, no, I've got to do it now. So at first I thought I'll do the one with Gav. And this is how low my expectations were, to be completely honest. I said, I said it probably have about 10 people listen to it. And I said, if I get more than 10, I'll do a second episode. But I really didn't expect it. I thought honestly, it's going to probably be about 6 or 7 people listen to it.
Yeah.
You know, for the first 10 minutes and then switch it off. So, yeah, obviously I did it. And then I think it was got about 100 listens in the first week or something. And I was like, oh, okay, hang on a minute. That might be a bit more popular than I thought. So, yeah. And then I sort of said, I think I said, oh, I'll do 10.
Yeah.
And then I did 10, and then I just basically just kept going. It really was by accident. I was listening to podcasts a lot of the time. Sam did Racks to Riches.
Yeah.
Just before that, and I was really waiting for him to release an episode because it was the first time we'd had a UK based podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
And it was brilliant. And I think he did something like 5 or 6 episodes or something like that, and then obviously stopped. And then there was this sort of, it was around that sort of 2-3 months after he'd sort of stopped doing it, and no one else had sort of picked up the baton and started another one. So that's why I just said, okay, someone needs to jump in and do this, you know, like, because, you know, while the ball's rolling, let's keep it going. You know, let's keep a UK podcast going. Because don't get me wrong, I love the American ones. Marilia Python Radio is like one of my favorite ones to listen to and things like that. And, you know, and I would listen to episodes again and again, you know, since they were good episodes. So, yeah, I just, it really did happen by accident. And then I really enjoy talking to people. Like, we, you know, we all know we can talk about snakes for hours. So
yeah, it's nice to sit down and speak to someone that has a passion that is the same as yours as well. But I think that's one of the reasons that I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm in the same sort of boat as you. Like, I was chatting to a friend. I was like, again, same as you. Like, I'm listening to like the Trap Talk podcast and a lot of the American ones. And I listened to a couple of like the older episodes of UK ones, and then they dropped off. And I was like, there's not a lot going on. And like, I listened to yours. I listened to Trap Talk and a few others as well. But I found that I wanted something where, like, I listened to, what's the other one as well? Wolfie Roar's podcast. I went on his as a guest as well, and I enjoyed being on as a guest on that. But I listened to them all, and I find I was like, I really like it, but it's like they're always talking about royals. This person's always talking about royals. So, this one, I went, we're going to do royals because obviously I really like royals and I'm a royal keeper, but I want to do like a royal episode, then an episode that's nothing to do with like, so I've done royals and then I did someone that kept macaws, and then I did royals and then I've got a monitor keeper.
Yeah.
Just so it like mixes up a bit like when you're watching Deadly 60 and like he's got a snake and then the next minute he's got a jellyfish. Like that's a sort of plan, but in a long term, like a long form podcast sort of thing. So it seems to be working quite well.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
No, it's really good. So if anyone's listening at the moment and they wanted to start their own podcast, do you have any tips or advice you'd like to give them?
Do it. I to be honest, I think the more podcasts, the better. I listen to them, luckily at work, you know, when we're doing something, I can put the headphones on and just, you know, listen to podcasts and stuff. The thing that you need to think about is, A, be yourself, right? So don't try and be something you're not. But what you need to do is you need to think of a way of what makes your, what's going to be different about your podcast.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that's going to make it bad, in a sense, is if you're asking the same typical podcast questions as another podcast. I'll just use an example. I'm not saying I'm great at this because I don't think I'm good at podcasts. But the first podcast I did with Gav, I'd listened to him on, I think, 5 different podcasts, and they'd all asked him pretty much similar questions. So I knew how he'd got in the hobby. I knew what projects he was working with. You know, so I decided to ask him about projects he wasn't working with, just his opinion on like different projects. Then I was able to get him on again and talk to him about his current projects. And I could easily do a third one with him now because he's acquired new snakes and blah, blah, blah. And all three would be different.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't ask him the same questions that, say, MJ would ask him or you would ask him. You know, you've got to just try and try and not do like, yeah, not do the same questions, the typical podcast questions.
No, I know. I did laugh this morning, not this morning, a couple of days ago, because I would sort of, I write myself like a little script, not like a full thing, but just to remind myself, like, so I don't lose where I'm at, because otherwise I will end up talking about something completely different and be off topic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd written my little script, and then I was listening to your last episode, and you said at the beginning of your episode, I'm not going to ask you where you started and how you got into it, because everyone says that's a really boring question. I was like, okay, that's the first question. I was like, you know what, if he's not asking it, I'm going to ask it, because someone's got to ask it.
Well, yeah, no, I don't mind that question.
No, and, no.
And I even said, I won't say who told me that, but basically I even said to him, I said, the problem is that's the easiest podcast question to get the conversation going.
Definitely.
And it eats up a bit of time, you know. So if you've got a difficult guest, it's quite nice, because sometimes that can eat up 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, and if nothing else, it gives you like that extra, like, you go, oh, I can ask them a question about that specific thing, and it leads on, it opens it up quite well.
Yes, you can learn something about the person that's not on their Instagram page, and it might give you something to ask later in the podcast. But I understand that the reason why he was saying it is, you know, if you ask everyone tends to have a similar story. So,
which is, yeah, you wouldn't think they do, but it seems like most people are like, well, I got my first leopard gecko or bearded dragon when I was 12, and then I had a break when I was in my late teens, 20s, and then when I got adult money and became a proper grown up, I started again.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but, it's my midlife crisis, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, But no, I would say it's pretty easy to get going. Don't be nervous. Don't be worried. The only people really, I mean, I'm now, I think, 30 episodes in. I've had very little, like, comebacks or any negative comments, which is great. You know, the 99.9% is positive, which I wasn't expecting. I thought, oh, I'm going to put myself out there and I'm going to get loads of, like,
people ripping you a new one. Or,
and it's just not like that.
No, not so much. I'm exactly the same. I was expecting like my friends to go on there and take the piss and get like animal rights people, and I've had none of it. Actually, it's all been really supportive. It's been really good.
To be honest, I've probably in 30 episodes, I've probably had 2 DMs of someone saying something, and to be honest, both of them, when I explained what I was saying to them, they both were great. And I still talk to those people now. It wasn't bad. It was just that they misunderstood what I said. And one of them was a joke, and they obviously didn't get that it was a joke. And then I had to explain the joke to them, and then they went, oh, okay, I get what you're saying now. And I was like, yeah, it was a joke. I you know.
That's fair enough. And if, like you say, if they're happy and they've explained it, then it's not the end.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we have got a minute and a half left before timer runs out. So before you go, can you plug yourself? Please tell me tell everyone that's listening where they can find you, be it the podcast or your like Instagrams or whatever. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so the podcast is on YouTube under Vivid Skin Reptiles on my YouTube channel. It's on Spotify. Just type in Morph Talk and it'll come up. My Instagram is Vivid Skin Reptiles. I'm too lazy to do a separate one for Morph Talk. I post on there usually on a story when I'm releasing a new episode. And that's it, really.
Brilliant. Well, I've really enjoyed this, Gary. Thank you very much for coming on. And I know it was short notice, so you've
saved
me.
I appreciate it, buddy.
It was really, really good. Unfortunately, we have now run out of time. We've got 30 seconds left before it's just going to help. So, we'll definitely have to do a round 2. Whether that round 2 is you coming back on or if I come on the guest and yours, we'll sort that out in the future. We'll call it a day there. Thank you very much for coming on, mate, and we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, brilliant. Cheers, bud.
Cheers, dude. Thank you. All right, that is the end of that. We've got 15 seconds left. So thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to find out any more, go and check the show notes below. Thank you very much. Until next time. Bye-bye.